This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The television version of this show airs on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. U.S. liberals and even progressives have a bit of a crush on Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. The telegenic young leader has won over hearts and minds with his socially liberal values of embracing multicultural and speaking in Obama-like fashion in broad visionary terms. But behind the facade, as is the case with Obama, lies a cynical politician, at least judging by his actions. Trudeau has in recent months approved or has leaned toward approving major fossil fuel projects, earning the ire of Canadian environmental activists and Indigenous communities. My guest is Derek O'Keefe. He's the founding editor of Ricochet Media, a writer and activist based in Vancouver, BC. He's been writing about these issues. Welcome to the program, Derek.
Oh, great to be on the program. Thank you, Sonali.
And I said Indigenous communities, of course, in Canada, you refer to them as First Nations peoples. Let's first talk about what it was in the most recent project that seems to be this just huge liquid natural gas LNG project that the Trudeau government has approved. What is this project? How devastating would it be environmentally?
Well, this is on the northwest coast of British Columbia, and approving this LNG gas project, which if it goes through, will be worth something like $36 billion, just a massive export project. Now, the federal government has approved it, Trudeau has approved it, but it still requires the Malaysian company behind it, Petronas, to make a final decision to actually go forward with it. As you know, the gas prices are low worldwide, and there's a glut of fracked gas with so much of it coming online all over the world. It's not clear this project will go ahead, but if it does go ahead, it poses a very clear and present danger to the fisheries that the First Nations people on the northwest of BC have relied on for many thousands of years. It's actually, the planned terminal is right off of Leilu Island, which is a key spawning area for salmon and other fish I think it's the second largest salmon-run river in British Columbia, the Skeena River. So there's divisions in the First Nations communities. They're not unanimous. Some of them have signed agreements with the companies involved in this to have revenue sharing, but many others are standing firmly against this. And Justin Trudeau, since he's come to power, has very much touted an era of reconciliation with First Nations and a new nation-to-nation relationship with all the hundreds of First Nations Indigenous peoples across the country. So for him to just greenlight this project when there's still this fierce opposition is just sort of one sign that this agenda of reconciliation is really in stark contradiction with his other more important or more foundational agenda of serving corporate Canada and serving the fossil fuel industries by getting some of these projects going ahead.
And Derek, I understand that the approval from his government came just a day after he signed protections for the Great Bear Rainforest. Do these two decisions contradict one another?
He was actually touring the west coast of British Columbia with the royal couple, Prince William, and Princess Kate, Prince of Wales, was touring British Columbia, and they made a big show of going to the Great Bear Rainforest and announcing a new designation under the Commonwealth. So it was really more an announcement by the royal family, but Trudeau was along for the ride for many of the photo ops.
I see.
Touting this Great Bear Rainforest. And during the election campaign last year, Justin Trudeau had said the Great Bear Rainforest is no place to put a pipeline. And he later sort of nuanced that message to say the Great Bear Rainforest was no place to put a tar sands pipeline, referring to another major pipeline proposal, the Enbridge Northern Gateway tar sands pipeline, which doesn't look like it's going ahead now, thankfully, would have had the terminal in a similar location to this LNG project. But both would be devastating for the environment, both would carry major risks, and both would involve a huge expansion of tanker traffic off the west coast of BC.
And I should, of course, mention, and I think a lot of our American environmentalists are aware, that Canada is home to a huge reserves of tar sands, these very dirty crude oil that actually ties the fossil fuel industries of Canada and the United States. Wouldn't this LNG project that the Trudeau government just approved, if it were to go through, undercut Canada's commitment to the Paris Accord that was signed last year?
Oh, absolutely. There's no way that Canada could meet its Paris commitments if it goes ahead with the projected, if it goes ahead with what the industry wants for either the LNG industry or the tar sands industry. There's clearly a decision that has to be made. On the one hand, Trudeau has promised to implement the Paris Agreement, take a more serious stance on climate change than the previous Harper government. On the other hand, he has assured these industries that he will be able to get their so-called get their products to market. That's the favorite phrase of Trudeau and the other minister. If Trudeau is pressed on it, he talks about Canadian history and how the prime minister's job is to get maple syrup to market and get the furs to market, referring to the old natural resource industries of Canada. And he seems to have a pretty simplistic understanding of his own role as being to just go along with these new extractive industries. But the continued digging up of these fossil fuel resources, exporting and burning of these fossil fuels, is simply incompatible with a livable planet. And that's what the Paris Agreement spells out if you take any of the science in that document seriously. And it's not clear that Trudeau, if he understands this contradiction, I guess, on some level, but he does seem to still think he can keep all people happy all the time, despite these contradictory interests that he's clearly straddling here.
And of course, you know, just as we had a sharp contrast on the surface between George W. Bush and Barack Obama in Canada, the Stephen Harper, very right-wing government, contrasted with the Justin Trudeau government, seemed to be, you know, a move in a better direction. But ultimately, of course, a lot of these Liberal governments still are beholden to industry, in particular the fossil fuel industry. On this issue of the LNG terminal being approved in BC, how do First Nations communities, maybe not all, but at least some, view Trudeau? Do they see this as a major betrayal, particularly given that he has paid lip service to First Nations and to, as you said earlier, really renewing ties and having a very different approach?
Yeah, we can take, for example, the Haida Nation and living on Haida Gwaii, which are the islands formerly known as the Queen Charlotte Islands, officially had their name changed back to the Haida Gwaii. That's just across, more or less just across from the LNG terminals there up on the northwest coast. They're a series of islands where the Haida lived. And the Trudeau family had a relationship going back to Pierre Trudeau and his wife visiting Haida Gwaii in the 60s and 70s. And so Justin Trudeau, as a younger man before he was prime minister, he got a big tattoo, a Haida symbol on his upper arm, I guess on his shoulder. And just today, actually, there's an article where the Haida artist who designed the design that became the tattoo that Trudeau has speaking out, saying he's very disappointed in Justin Trudeau's approval of the LNG project. The Haida Nation is worried about tankers on their waters there on the northwest, and they're very disappointed in Trudeau's decision on this, and also the indications that Trudeau will approve the Kinder Morgan pipeline, which is another major tar sands pipeline that will go through southern BC. So the Haida are speaking out, saying that they're very disappointed in Trudeau, and this is awkward, as the article in Maclean's magazine describes, because he's got a very permanent and very famous, infamous tattoo. When he does his boxing photo ops, this is the prominent image, right? You have the biceps of this young photogenic prime minister, and then you have the big Haida tattoo, which is now exposing the political contradictions really at the heart of this government.
Tell us about the Kinder Morgan pipeline. I'm glad you brought that up. U.S. Americans don't know much about this pipeline, but this is a major focus of Canadian activists. Where would this pipeline be located, and what could its impact be? What stage of planning is it in? And has the Trudeau government indicated they'll approve it?
The Trudeau government has indicated it through leaks to Bloomberg and a number of Canadian media, reporting that unnamed sources in the Prime Minister's office are saying that Trudeau would favors approving this pipeline. He has to make a decision by December 19th. So in just a month and a half or 2 months, there will be a final decision on this. This is a major tar sands pipeline. As big, or I think even slightly bigger than the capacity of the Keystone XL pipeline, which of course was rejected by the Obama administration. So the Kinder Morgan would run from northern Alberta to Vancouver. There's an existing pipeline that supplies Vancouver and the lower mainland with its domestic supply, and Kinder Morgan does a little bit of export from that existing pipeline. They want to build a second pipeline. They call it a twinning, but it's really a brand new pipeline that would carry over 700,000, I think 690,000 barrels of crude oil a day, and almost all of that for export. So this is really about putting a major export terminal in through Vancouver Harbor, and something like, I believe it's 700 tankers a year would be leaving through the port of Vancouver. So hundreds of crude oil tankers carrying diluted bitumen, you know, a dangerous product when it spills, as we found out before. And Kinder Morgan, the interesting thing about Kinder Morgan is this is the company formerly known as Enron, really. It was founded by Richard Kinder, who was passed over for the top job at Enron in favor of Kenneth Lay, who you'll remember, older listeners will remember, over the Enron scandals. Richard Kinder got out of there, formed Kinder Morgan, this energy transport and infrastructure company, and became one of the most influential corporate players in Houston, Texas. And in fact, George Bush Sr. once praised Richard Kinder as having done more for George W. Bush than anyone else in terms of, you know, his early political career before he was president. So Kinder Morgan is tied to Republican politics. Their top executives donate to this day to a lot of Republicans who continue to deny climate change and other things. Richard Kinder, for his part, didn't donate to Donald Trump, donated to Jeb Bush in this current political run. But nevertheless, a big player in Republican politics. And it's interesting in this election season that Canada now faces this showdown with this big Texas billionaire and oil baron.
And on this issue of Kinder Morgan, how have Canadian youth in particular responded, given that Trudeau has also painted himself as an advocate for Canadian youth? I understand that there were recently major protests by young folks across the country.
Yeah, well, Trudeau, along with taking the mantle of Prime Minister, in Canada, the Prime Minister picks his cabinet traditionally entirely from elected members of parliament. He picked himself as the Minister of Youth. So he has a second hat. He's 44 years old.
But is that common, by the way, or is that unusual for that to happen?
I don't know. It's kind of like a 44-year-old naming themselves the Minister of Youth when they're also the leader of the country. It's kind of something like an old Stalinist leader would have done or something, because you like to stretch the definition of youth. So it's not common. It's a new thing, but it doesn't seem to have gotten any bad press, except now you have millennials who overwhelmingly voted for Trudeau to oust Stephen Harper. They're also happen to be the part of the electorate that's most concerned with climate change and, you know, where the grassroots activism is very dynamic. So you had on Monday of this week, 99 people were young people, a youth protest. 99 tried to go into Parliament to deliver their message in opposition to the Kinder Morgan pipeline to Trudeau and the government. They were all arrested, so essentially civil disobedience. They crossed over the fence to try to get into Parliament. Police took them away, issued them citations. So that's just the tip of the iceberg, though. There are hundreds and thousands of young people across the country willing to take civil disobedience action, willing to be arrested. And it's not just young people here in British Columbia. Thousands have signed up to do whatever is necessary to stop the Kinder Morgan pipeline being built. So approving the Kinder Morgan pipeline might just open up a whole new can of worms for Justin Trudeau and risk losing the youth vote that propelled him to power.
Finally, Derek, here in the United States, after the defeat of the Keystone XL pipeline, the next big fight perhaps even bigger than the fight over Keystone is the fight over the Dakota Access Pipeline. That fight centered right now in North Dakota, led by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, and that pipeline actually far along, quite a bit far along, quite a bit of the pipeline is even already in the ground. How have Canadian environmental activists expressed solidarity with those folks here in the United States that are seeking to stop this pipeline?
Well, I know there have been a number of people have gone out there to North Dakota. Actually, the Tsleil-Waututh Nation recently, who are leading the fight against the Kinder Morgan pipeline. The Tsleil-Waututh Nation, who are here on the Vancouver Harbor, they're the people that live right at the terminal of the Kinder Morgan pipeline. They actually went as part of a delegation of Northwest U.S. Tribal leaders to Standing Rock, and they took this totem pole, which had been carved by a carver from the Lummi Nation in Washington State. They traveled all through the northwest of the United States and western Canada, and one of their final stops was in Standing Rock in North Dakota to bring solidarity to the Sioux peoples who are fighting this pipeline. So there's been a lot of back and forth. A number of other leaders and grassroots activists have gone out to Standing Rock. Some of them are there now. Media outlets that cover these issues, like our own at Ricochet and others, have gone to Standing Rock because, of course, you know, it's the big concern is that as soon as the media focus turns away from Standing Rock, the arrests, the mass arrests, and the repression will get worse. So there's been a lot of bridge building, and it's not just over this flashpoint of the Dakota Access Pipeline. For many years, these ties have been built. And we have to remember that for Indigenous peoples, the 49th parallel is a really artificial border imposed on them. And many of them don't recognize it, don't recognize its legitimacy. So the Indigenous nations of Turtle Island, so-called North America, have always had these relationships. Not to idealize the history, but these are long-term alliances that we're seeing play out in Standing Rock. And something like Standing Rock will be what Justin Trudeau is dealing with if he tries to build this Kinder Morgan pipeline through British Columbia, for example. You can bet a lot of nations to the south of the border will be coming up in solidarity as well.
Wow. Well, we'll certainly keep an eye out for these issues. Unfortunately, American environmentalists, U.S. American environmentalists, don't pay enough attention to what's happening in Canada. So, Derek, I really appreciate all your work and joining us. I'm assuming ricochet.media is the best place to read your writings on this?
Yeah, that's where I'll be continuing to cover these issues. And we look forward to more of these discussions because, the pipelines run across the borders. The fossil fuel industries are working on all sides of this. So it's important that movements and media outlets that are covering these issues make those connections across the border.
Thank you so much, Derek. Derek O'Keefe is the founding editor of Ricochet Media, writer and activist and father of two, based in Vancouver, BC. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/RUWithSonali.